This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 8th of June, 2023, and we thought we saw some strange things beneath the surface yesterday, and that seemed to be a bit prescient in terms of this continuing today, where we see the broad market not doing well, minus about 0.4% on the S&P 500, but the mega caps and especially some of the AI-related names are doing quite poorly. And just to pull out a few names, NVIDIA down around 3%, Google about 4%, Microsoft 3%, Amazon 4%. So some big names having a really rough sledding yesterday. And then, Peter, we're seeing again sort of these, you can pull up random value ETFs and look at the Russell 2000, actually posted another really strong session. So again, it feels like something odd is going on across the market with perhaps some people taking chips off the table that have been riding the AI trade or otherwise. And then at the same time, we have this really bizarre phenomenon of the VIX actually closing lower yesterday and to a new close, low close since before the pandemic. So just really, we continue to really look at this market with some caution here.
Yeah, as you say, Russell being up 2% yesterday, and with the Nasdaq down, as you mentioned, reflected again yesterday. There is something going on in the market right now that is indicating that some bigger things are happening. You know, as you said yesterday, John, new positions or a previous trade breakdown, you know, whatever it is, it feels awkward what's happening in the market. And I wrote a piece yesterday that, and also as you mentioned with the VIX coming down further, tried to write a piece yesterday and I called it the equity signal calm waters, or do they? And I think that one of the key dynamics to understand right now is that we have never seen the S&P 500 as concentrated as it is right now. So we have the 10 largest stocks on Friday, you know, having a combined index weight of 30.4%. What that means is that it means that the signal value of equity indices have gone down, because it gets concentrated on a more narrow set of risk factors and a significantly small set of stocks. So there's an increased risk, there's an increased fragility in the equity market from that, and that's just definitely something that it's not a pleasant read, I would say. And then if you stay with me here on slide three, you can see on the chart to the right, we comparing here the S&P 500's total return index with the S&P 500 equal weighting index on a total return basis. And that ratio has gone down ever since the peak in the .com for reasons that you know, have something to do with, you know, high dividend yield in long tail, high growth, etc. There's a small cap factor in there as well. Whatever. The point is that when you have a situation, so the very light blue line underneath the ratio there is the change in that relative total return ratio, which essentially is the relative performance between the two indices. So the over 6 months, and we have seen that the S&P 500 has outperformed the equal weighted index by 8.5%. So in other words, the largest cap stocks in the cap weighted index have outperformed the long tail of the market by 8.5% over the past 6 months. I don't think this is an indicator in itself that is very good at predicting the direction of the market, whether we could have a meltup or a crash. But I find it interesting that the last five times we were at this level of outperformance by this cluster of mega caps were during the safe haven trades of 2020, during the pandemic crash and then the rebound. It was in the months post the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy in 2008. It was around the rebound in March 2009. It was during the absolute peak of the dot-com bubble. As you can see, I've marked all these occasions with red circles. And then during the LTCM and the Southeast Asian crisis. So my point being here, John, whatever is going on, this equity market, the dynamics, the microstructure, what the structure we're seeing in the equity market is just overlapping with big market turning points in previous times. Whether it's for the upside or downside, I don't know. I don't think I'm smart enough to guess that. I just thing. I don't like the smelling of what's happening in the equity market. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's a very sudden development as well. Just in terms of the viciousness of that move over the last couple of days. So that's why it's equally, I think, or doubly remarkable just how rapid the onset has been. Yes, it's been going on for some time, but then there's just this really dramatic acceleration. It feels like something is going on and could the pins or the shoe or whatever is dropping, could be dropping pretty soon. We do have a very interesting week ahead coming up with the CPI to the US and, of course, the FOMC meeting. And we'll preview some of that tomorrow. We don't have all those items on the calendar just yet, but just want to do a brief on the FX side. I'm going to go back to slide four later, but on slide five, so looking at the dollar versus the US dollar versus the Canadian dollar, and we see that Canadian dollar strength doubling down yesterday as we saw the Bank of Canada surprising hawkish and having with hawkish guidance as well. Saw the 2-year Canadian rate up some 20 basis points. Wasn't an enormous reaction in the FX market, at least in terms of dollar CAD, because as you can see from that big slide there, Canadian dollar had already been very strong, and there was a hawkish shift priced in. It just was they managed to even clear that bar of hawkishness with this statement. Wondering, as we're warming up our view on an incoming recession, if this ends up proving a policy mistake that could be reversed viciously. But I do know that dollar Canada working into the bottom part of the range, it's sort of been in effect really since back into 2022. So there's a lot of tough sledding to get some sort of dramatic new momentum view. Arguably, the 133 area, which is the lows since the very beginning of this year, is the most clearly defined sort of more local level there. So watching that, as well as the Aussie strength, where we tried or the market tried to take Aussie versus the dollar through that 67 area, popped reasonably above 67. But closed back below. So the jury is still out on that one, whether there is a break unfolding there. And I think it's a dramatic bull bear line there around that 67 and those levels just below it in the Aussie dollar pair. And then, Ole, not comfortable for gold traders to see this turn in hawkishness, first from the RBA and now from the Bank of Canada. That's why I assume we're seeing gold here pushing a little bit down here on this this local support.
Yeah, the market didn't like that surprise from the Bank of Canada yesterday. But at the same time, we're holding the line as a right here in the update on slide six on the slide there. And we basically stuck in a range, finding some support down towards that 1935 area. And this is actually happening at a time where you can see on the right-hand side that the short-end contracts, futures contracts, they're now pricing in and no change in rates from current levels by the end of the year. And clearly that's not going to happen, I would imagine, because if we do get a sharp slowdown into the autumn, as some of the indicators are pointing to, then we could potentially see quite a significant lower rates at this time around the end of the year. So I think that's probably also one of the reasons why there's not really a massive amount of long liquidation coming into gold based on that delay in the peak rate. But we need to get some further guidance for the upside potential to start to reemerge. But for now, it's holding its own. We're watching some of the other indicators, how the gold miners are doing, how silver is doing relatively, and how platinum is doing relatively. A small pickup in silver over the past couple of days, providing some support. Same goes for platinum. The miners are still troubled by all the focus on the technology space, as Peter just mentioned.
All right, so and then rolling back to that Bank of Canada story, so they're concerned about this stickier than expected core inflation. I think they're being a little bit impatient there, just looking at one of the data series that they follow. But regardless, the market repricing them to go around another 40 basis points through the December meeting. And it's just interesting as a small note here and connecting the dots to that with also what's expected from the Bank of England. So the similar sort of trajectory for many of these central banks in terms of the expectations curve. So the market looking for maybe another hike, maybe another two hikes, and sort of the peak happening later this year and no significant cutting until we're well into next year, whereas the Fed has this very tight pricing by the market. Yes, we're probably going to get another 25 basis points, the market is saying, but they're going to be already rolling over by December and certainly into January. So I think there's some tension there, and I have a hard time. I think one side of that equation is wrong. So if they're right on the Fed, then the other central banks will be doing something similar and vice versa. And then one I want to really pull out is probably one of the most stretched views in terms of the market's forward pricing and this divergence between what the market is expecting from relative central bank policy is the Fed versus the Bank of England and where the front end of the yield curve is in relative terms, UK to US. So roll back to slide four there. The black line is the so-called two-year spread. Two-year means what the two-year rate will be in 2 years as priced by the market forward curve, and then spreading those, so the UK versus the US. So basically the market is saying that in 2 years, the UK rate will be 100 basis points higher than the US. I think that is getting quite stretched. We did see it back in the trust quarter saying mini budget debacle back there when there was a panic selling of UK gilts. Obviously, that was a huge strain on the sterling and on UK sovereign fixed income in general. And I think it's interesting to see we've seen some directional sympathy between that spread and cable, so sterling versus the dollar, which is the blue line, until the last leg here of this spread heading back higher. In other words, the Bank of England being seen as being forced to continue hiking more than the Fed here because of hotter than expected inflation numbers. There is some weak data coming in. It's a big test next week with some of the UK employment-related data coming in, and of course with the FOMC as well. But this is a sign of weakness to me that this spread widening is not assisting the sterling versus US dollar in rising more. So, and as well, if we're seeing more material weakness coming into the UK economy, it looks like they're beset with stagflation already now and far earlier than the US. So certainly not a currency positive situation. It removes the ability to do fiscal, certainly as an effective policy tool. Okay, a bit of a spiel there. Sorry, Ole, let's get over back to you and the natural gas situation. Extremely cheap natural gas. I think it's an unrealistic price for the very important commodity for the long term, but it is what it is, and we have to price on what the price is for this month, don't we, even though the forward contracts may say something else.
Indeed, but what we are seeing some signs of improvement or support standing from, if you look at the underlying fundamentals. If you look at slide 7 here, you can see that the production is starting to slow. We're back below 100 billion cubic feet a day. We're seeing the number of rigs slowing as well. So the market is producers are starting to respond to these very weak price levels, and that will provide some underlying support, especially at a time like this where we are seeing gas demand actually being quite strong. First of all, due to the cheapness of the gas price, but also because of the heat wave that we are seeing here in Europe is also an impact. It's also impacting the US. So the demand for power is going up towards heating. So all in all, we're seeing some support coming in, but we haven't broken anything to the upside yet. So it's still a bit of a long stretch here, but at least it looks like we are starting to build a floor from where prices can eventually start to move higher. So looking ahead to the weekly inventory report today, again, we're expecting an injection which is higher than the five-year average, but again, with the but we're keeping an eye on production and demand as potential signs of support coming into the market.
All right, yeah, those incredible pictures of the wildfires from Canada affecting the air in New York City with orange air, and it's just crazy. It's very disturbing, really, to look at. Okay, let's get back to stocks to watch. We've talked a little bit about AI here, and I don't know how much you want to rage here against the situation, Peter, after you were at an event last night. There was a bit of hype around AI. You had a sense from the room that this is still an ongoing thing.
Yeah, I've on slide 8, I've just put in the we have all these theme baskets, and you can find it under the themes tab on the research inside the Saxo various trading platforms. And it's just took a snapshot there of our AI list where we coupled together a lot of these stocks that have been related to the AI theme. And of course, it's not an exhaustive list, but and I think that if you look at the price performance yesterday, it gives you a pretty good idea what happened. And we flagged Nvidia in yesterday's podcast as something that was breaking down technically. So we're highlighting the AI related stocks again today, obviously a key watch. And with all the commentaries I did earlier in the podcast, be aware of the, I think the equity market in the US has never been more sensitive to a change in sentiment in technology stocks. And that of course relates to the narrative around AI. Couple of other stories to mention. I think Amazon is an important one. Amazon was actually down yesterday, almost 5%, fell out of the sky after very strong momentum recently. But this is just really a stock that it's fascinating. It was talk of the town for almost a decade, increasingly so, John. And now it has faded into the shadows. It's actually quite remarkable. And Jeff Bezos has left the company, enjoying life now. I don't know what it is. It's just it has lost its energy, its magic. And But it has some very successful business offerings. It has its e-commerce business, which is an international business. It has its Prime subscription business. On top of that, of course, it's cloud business. And I suspect it was the cloud sell-off yesterday that also hit Amazon. But they did launch an ad-tiered subscription service for Prime video streaming, which is basically, you know, going down the same road as Netflix. So you're seeing this, you know, I think it indicates a lot of these video streaming services, they're hitting a roadblock here and how much they can grow the business if they keep it only as a paid subscription service. But by adding, you know, ads to the mix, you can lower the price or skip it altogether. And then you drastically expand the market reach to a larger, wider population that is not willing to pay up whatever $8, $10, $12, depending on what services we are looking at. So I think that's an extra advertising revenue stream for Amazon to track that. And then highlighting a European name called Evotech. It's a German company. It was upgraded this morning in a sell side equity note, and it was called the Tesla of biologics. I think that's a pretty hefty headline to put it. So obviously I'll be looking more into this company. I'm just flagging it here. It might be of interest. It's a company that is setting itself up for being, you know, a key manufacturing player of different drugs, basically, and they recently signed a pretty big deal with Sandoz. Let's track this. I probably wouldn't call it the Tesla. If it was really about the manufacturing play, it feels more like it's a TSMC. But who knows? I'll be looking more into that now. I've flagged it. Always interesting to have these small growth companies. And then on slide 9, the earnings watch. Flagged it yesterday. DocuSign is the next one to watch. They will be reporting today after the U.S. market call. Growth is slowing down. Can they satisfy investors with, you know, more good efforts and execution on the profitability side? Obviously, very critical for these small to medium tier technology companies to improve their profitability.
All right. And then on the macro calendar, very light day today. We have the U.S. weekly jobless claims. Those edged back lower last week and have just not really been flagging any cause for concern on the U.S. jobs market. Eventually, we'll need to see that very lagging indicator in the U.S. Market picking up if we're supposed to see these eventual Fed cuts. But it will be one of the higher frequency indicators we need to watch for firmer signs that this weakening of the economy is grinding on here. Tonight, it's just remarkable figures. The May, so CPI and PPI figures out of China. And just for perspective, those were out at 0.1% year-on-year for the CPI and minus 3.6% year-on-year for the PPI last time, expected only to rise to 0.2% for the CPI and drop to minus 4.3% on the PPI. So just lots of signs of spare capacity in the Chinese economy, lots of talk about a potential for a new stimulus. There's a lot of unemployment, especially youth unemployment in China, but there just seems to be an odd, almost radio silence on what next steps are meant to be here. But one to track there, as well as the Canadian jobs data this week, which as they didn't release last Friday. But next week, shaping up to be a big one. Again, the Tuesday data from the UK on jobs and claims, does it cement that those really ugly numbers we saw in April or last month? Some of this is data for March. Some of this data will be for April. Some of it will be for May. Does it match that data we saw the last month in terms of a very big uptick in signs of slack in the labor market in the UK? And if so, what does that mean for sterling? And then as well, of course, the US CPI on Tuesday and the FOMC Wednesday. But we'll get to that and preview all that in incoming podcasts. For now, that is a wrap, and we'll be back tomorrow with a Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.